Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us today. It's a Farmer Friday. We would love to hear from you all throughout the show. Our phone lines will be open, 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. Or email us, radio@agphd.com. Well, we are going to get to the Ag PhD mailbag just about right away here during the show. I would just tell you, we are in our own operation, just wrapping up. We wrapped up harvest here. We're working on all this fall work. And, you know, it's one of the most important things that you can do right now is get yourself prepared for this next growing season. Soil, whether it's soil testing, applying fertilizer, getting the tillage done, all those things are just so important to set yourself up so you can raise that great crop going into next year. We've been lucky that commodity prices have continued to come up. I'm optimistic. I think we're going to have good commodity prices going into next year. We'll see what ends up happening. But either way, whatever commodity prices do, we can always control our actions out in the fields, everything from fertility to tillage, seed bed preparation, getting the right seed to soil contact and seeding depth and spacing, all those things. Just really important. Got to be thinking about the future, not only just this year. All right, let's jump right into the phone lines, or onto the phone lines. Got Jim calling in from Ohio. Jim, how you doing today?
Doing pretty good. The sun is trying to come out every once in a while here.
We've been getting a lot of sunlight here just lately and got a whole bunch coming next week. Temperatures look better, so yeah, things are shaping up. What can we do for you today?
Well, since it's going to shape up to be warmer next week, I got volunteer wheat that I chisel plowed wheat stubble last summer, and I got volunteer wheat. What should I be spraying on it next week to get rid of that?
Well, usually we would talk to you about Roundup. Is there a reason why you don't want to use Roundup, or what were you thinking?
Well, I was thinking Roundup and maybe Simazine or Basis.
Just to leave yourself some residual for the future?
Yeah.
Or what? So what crop are you going to rotate to?
Corn.
Okay. Why Simazine or Basis? What weeds are you really after besides the volunteer wheat? What were you hoping to gain with those other herbicides?
Well, maybe keep the chickweed down for next spring.
Sure. Yep. Well, you can certainly do it. I guess chickweed, the reason why I ask especially about the Basis thing, we're not huge fans of Basis just because so many people are trying to kill ALS-resistant broadleaves, and Basis is an ALS herbicide, but chickweed, as far as I know, we haven't found any that's been ALS resistant. So if you want to throw that in, you certainly can. But anyway, on the Roundup, the one thing that I will tell you is because the temperatures have gotten colder already, because volunteer wheat is a tougher grass to control than just pigeon grass, you're going to have to make sure you use at least a halfway decent rate. Do you have, well, if it was name brand Roundup, I'd probably be going at least 22 ounces of 6 pound, maybe even as much as 32, but 22 will usually do it on the volunteer wheat. So somewhere kind of in that range. That's what I'd use for a rate, and I would just use Roundup. That'll kill your volunteer wheat.
I use a generic Roundup. I thought maybe a quart and a half.
4 pound? Yeah. Yep. Yeah. To be on the safe side, yep, that'd be similar to the 32 ounces of the 6 pound. So, yep, quart and a half, and then I'm going to feel super confident that you'll get all that volunteer wheat under control.
Should I throw any AMS in it?
Yep. Usually we're going to talk to you about 17 pounds per 100 gallons of water.
Okay, no crop oil then, just AMS.
Nope. Nope, you don't need that. Now, if you were trying to burn stuff down with, let's say, Basis or even the Simazine, would the crop oil help? Sure. If you had some broadleaves out there you're trying to burn down. Is there anything else out there right now that needs to be burned down, or are you just trying to use or trying to leave residual with these other herbicides?
I'm trying to leave some residual.
Yep.
So in case some wheat decides it wants to, in another week or so, wants to come up, I'll get it.
Sure. Yep, yep. Yeah, a lot of times what we end up doing when we're out fall spraying is we'll throw some dicamba out there to kill mare's tail or something like that. But if you don't have any of those winter annuals coming up yet, then that's awesome. So, yeah, that would be our recommendation for you. Just get out there with a good strong rate of glyphosate, and you should be able to control your volunteer wheat. Throw something else in if you want some residual for something else, and should be in good shape, Jim.
Sounds good, Dad.
All right.
Okay, thank you.
You bet. Thanks for the call today. Appreciate it.
All right, got this one from Kurt.
Well, wait, whoa, whoa. We got to jump into the Ag PhD mailbag. Got to play the music.
It's the mailbag.
This is what I'll play it right away on a Farmer Friday because you know we're going to get right into it. So Kurt from Central Illinois, young farmer, really appreciates the free information that we're giving out. Thanks, Kurt. We appreciate that. And he said, a question for you. We've been no-till or strip-till because we've got highly erodible ground for the last 40 years. Normally, our depth is set at 6 inches in the spring or 7 inches deep if we can go in the fall.
Wait. His depth for what?
Strip-till. He said we could go as deep as 12 inches if we had the power to pull that. Just wondering, what do you think about depth for putting on nutrients? And also, what do you think about just trying to open things up by varying our tillage depth, going a little bit deeper? Our CECs are anywhere between 12 and 25. Wonder if we have to worry about any nutrient loss if we get too deep.
Okay. If you put a leachable super deep, then you might have to worry a little bit about loss, and not so much in that heavy ground, but in more of the medium textured soils. But yeah, I mean, if you could, at least every once in a while, I would be placing more fertilizer deep. Now, I often say we would like to see the data, so then we have a better understanding of where we really need that fertilizer. So you'll occasionally hear us suggest soil tests every 1 inch or 2 inches or 3 inches. Let's make this simple for you. Every 3 inches. So 0 to 3, 3 to 6, 6 to 9, 9 to 12. And I'm not saying you do a whole bunch of that, but take 4 spots on your farm, let's just say, and do that. So you're going to pull the first 3 inches, the next three, the next three, the next three, send them all in separately and see what your fertility levels are at each depth. 6 inches is great. I like that for a strip till depth at a minimum. But would I like to get some fertility down to 12 inches? You bet. Because think about any time your soil dries out, it's the top few inches that dry out. Well, if you don't have moisture there, you're not going to get the fertility in. If you got moisture deeper, you're going to get fertility in. Plus, it's like you said, when you go a little deeper, now you've lessened the compaction all the way down. So yeah, at least occasionally I'd like to get down to 12. Well, stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Your soybeans are in the bin, but the game isn't over yet. Score more points this year by taking your beans to the end zone. At $10 beans, every point of moisture below your target takes away 15 cents per bushel. Reclaim that lost yield with the end zone bin system from Farm Shop MFG.
Downtime during spraying can lead to huge yield losses. Keep rolling with the Pentair Hypro Force Field. This pump features a unique self-regulated chamber that allows the pump to run dry while eliminating cracked seals, so you can spray longer and more reliably. Learn more at pentair.com/hypro.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, marestail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
Acre to acre, year to year, generation to generation, nobody scrutinizes performance like you do. And acre to acre, year to year, generation to generation, the consistent performance of Vasgrow brand soybeans helps to keep your profitability out in front, offering leading agronomic expertise and 100% exclusive genetics for strong yield potential. Ask your dealer how much further you can grow when Asgrow leads the way. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? Brian Ryberg from Buffalo Lake, Minnesota has done just that. Here's his story.
We began using a soil warrior on our farm the fall of 2014. We've seen many benefits from better water infiltration, a lot less hours on equipment, fuel, able to reduce our fertilizer side, so it's really simplified our operation.
See what makes Soil Warrior different and better at soilwarrior.com.
Welcome back. It's Farmer Friday on Ag PhD Radio. Really glad you're joining us today. You can also join the conversation if you would like. Our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD. Or you can always email us a question or just a picture or a comment, radio@agphd.com. Let's head out to the state of Washington. We got Steve with us right now. Steve, how's it going?
Hey, happy Friday, guys. How are you?
Pretty good. We heard you guys were a little bit white out there. Is the snow sticking around?
Well, last, in fact, it was a week ago, today, the 23rd, Mother Nature decided to throw us a curveball, and we went from, you know, nice 50s and good fall weather to all of a sudden 6 inches of snow and low of 10 and a high of 30, and we're just now starting to get back in to finish some fall tillage, and thank goodness we're back in the 50s again, and they're talking about another good stretch here. I was getting a little nervous. It was funny watching everybody around here that putting a little pep in their step now to get the final projects done, and wondering if that was a little teaser of what may come. But yeah, I guess you never know, right?
We got the same kind of thing here where we caught some snow, and so we've been out of the field for a while, and everybody's really excited about next week. It's supposed to warm up here, so it's good to hear you say that everybody's getting some stuff done now. We need that kind of encouragement.
Boy, that's for sure. You know, and also we were so dry up here. You know, we're in Eastern Washington State, and part of our state's in a D3. We're right between a D1 and D2. We were really dry, which was great for our wheat harvest in August. Didn't have any quality issues when you don't have any rain. But boy, come September, seeding the winter wheat was really tricky. We've got a terrible stand right now as far as emergence went, and we did get some moisture here in the form of rain. First middle part of October, and so now we're just praying we can keep these temperatures up and get this some of this weed up and a little bit bigger going into wintertime.
How about weed control? Do you do a lot in the wheat in the fall, or do you wait till spring to get most of that done?
50-50. You're seeing a lot more guys putting down some Anthem Flex and Zidua. It's been really nice, taking some variability out of the spring, it seems like, when you know, you're worried about freezing temperatures with using something like a Power Flex or an Offspray on the winter wheat, because you know you want to have a pretty good window of not having freezing weather a couple days before and a couple days after. And of course, you guys know how it is in springtime. It's you could have that within a matter of a day or two and not even know it. And so it takes a lot of guesswork out. And you're starting to see that really gain traction around here. In fact, that was what was bad, is everybody was finishing putting on their Zidua and Anthem, and then they were scrambling to remember what they had to winterize for pumps and sprayers before they froze and started breaking there last week. So
yeah, it gets crazy in the winter. I know we talk about that a lot when guys started reduced tillage in our state in a big way. We said, man, you're not a true no-tiller if you haven't got a frozen-up sprayer at least once or twice. And, you know, we were doing a lot of spring apps in those days, but there's a lot more fall apps here too. And you're right. If you're doing fall applications, don't forget about that winterizing. That's going to catch you quick. Now, I want to ask you a question, though. You're talking about some Group 15 products. Like, let's just take Zidua because that's a straight product. What do you see out of that Zidua or that Group 15 for grass control? What's it getting and what does it miss in your area?
Mainly cheatgrass. Darren's the biggest thing that the guys have been having good luck with. A lot of Italian ryegrass as well as a pre coming down. The biggest weed that we're facing around this area here is jointed goatgrass. You know, it shares the same genes as regular weed, and so you know you are seeing quite a bit of some two gene emmy wheat, and guys are putting a herbicide Beyond on down, but you know they're really stressing to use that as an absolute tool in the toolbox and respect that chemistry here with controlling that goatgrass, because you know when we start losing this chemistry to residual and not to residual, but to
resistance. Yep.
The resistance. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. That you know we're a long ways out from something down the pipeline. So you know it's got to be treated with respect by all means.
You know what? When I hear folks talk about tough weeds to control, I was really hoping. I'm like, oh, I hope he doesn't say jointed goatgrass, and you did. Yeah. And I was like, okay, for everybody listening that doesn't have jointed goatgrass, you are lucky. That is one that's really tough to get out of that rotation. Oof.
Boy, no kidding. Yeah, and it's been a mixture of that and a lot of IPM. I mean, you hate to burn, but sometimes you have to. They've been having pretty good luck reducing seed bank and of course, you know, light tillage on top. They're trying to get it sprouted in the fall and then possibly kill it, you know, as well. So you just have to throw everything at it. But boy, if you let it go, you're going to be in trouble because it's a nasty, nasty invasive weed.
We're talking to Steve in the state of Washington, who's got the snow leaving his farm, now getting back out in the field to get stuff done. Steve, thank you so much for the call. I know you're super busy right now. Really appreciate it. Stay safe this fall and good luck.
You too. Happy Halloween to you guys too.
You bet. Thank you. I've got Glenn on with us now down in Georgia. Glenn, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing fine. How about you, Dan?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Now, I know that you've been catching some rain. What's been happening lately down there?
Yes, we've been harvesting, trying to harvest clean rain, but we've been getting a lot. I mean, every few days we've been getting rain. So we got 2 inches yesterday.
Oh,
so.
My goodness. Yeah,
but
it's...
Our plan is to be back with picking peanuts tomorrow.
Okay. Okay, well, that's one good thing about light soils, that you get a chance to do those things. Hey, speak about soil. I understand you had a soil question for us.
Yeah, we're on most crops, but particularly corn and sweet corn, we spend a lot of money on magnesium, and we just can't harvest, get the tissue samples, you know, in the sweet spot. We just, the more we put, it just seems like we still can't get there. Any ideas?
Okay, so when are you putting this magnesium on? Are you just doing it at planting time? Are you doing it in the fall? Are you doing it in season? When is it getting applied?
We put some, you know, as we plant, but the majority of it's in season. Now, we also use dolomite lime. Now, we do that in the fall,
okay.
Pre-season.
What are you using in season? Liquid, dry?
K-Mag
in season. How much, roughly?
Oh, boy. Probably, I don't know, probably 500 or 600 pounds.
I'm sorry, what was that again?
500 or 600
500 or 600 Oh, okay, so quite a bit.
Yeah, and the magnesium is mobile within the plant. So if we've got it and we get it in early season, even if we dry out or something a little later, we can still move that through the plant to the new growth.
Yeah, okay, wow. So here are a couple of thoughts for you, Glenn. First of all, if it was me, we usually will try crazy stuff just to see what happens. Okay, so I might take just a few acres, 5 acres or 10 acres or something, and I might just go overboard. I might double up on everything and just see if that all of a sudden now changes my tissue levels. But you know, at the end of the day, we can't spend tissue levels. We can only spend the bushels we produce and, of course, the price we get.
Right.
But my point is, I was just, as a matter of fact, doing a bunch of training with agronomists this morning, and I showed them back in 2018, we raised a little bit of 300 bushel corn, and I showed them my tissue tests on boron, and I was completely deficient. I mean, at the very bottom end, according to what the lab said, for 8 of the 12 different weeks that we did plant tissue analysis, 8 of the 12, yet we raised over 300 bushel corn. So my point here is, what I would like to see is if you really dramatically change this, so you put on double the amount of magnesium, does it actually help yield, or should we be looking at different tissue levels? In other words, should we be happy with whatever our tissue levels are and say, oh, the lab might say they're low, but actually I got enough there for 250 bushel corn, just for example. So I'm just trying to tell you, I don't know that what the information you're getting on the tissue sampling in terms of a rating is necessarily right. I mean, the parts per million or whatever, that's, I'm sure, right. But the rating may or may not be.
Gotcha.
So what I'm telling you is, don't lose a whole bunch of sleep over it. It sounds to me like you're addressing magnesium several times there during the season. You should have ample pounds, theoretically. So, yeah, I just run some experiments, try doubling some stuff up, see if that shows up in the tissue, but more importantly, see if that shows up in yield, see if it's going to pay. I really question it because it sounds to me like you're getting plenty out there. Hey, Glenn, we got to run, but thanks a lot for the call today. Really appreciate it. Best of luck to you down there.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
You bet. Yeah, thank you. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more of your calls.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
When it comes to competitive herbicide formulations, you know Nufarm. They've been bringing growers trusted brands like Weedmaster, Patriot, and Diablo for decades, made right here in the USA. What's your favorite Nufarm brand? Email it to turnuptheburn@nufarm.com and you'll be entered to win a monthly $1,000 product giveaway. In these unprecedented times, you're facing unprecedented pressure. Nufarm's here to help.
We now bring you an important news bulletin.
This just in from Live Action News.
Innovation has come to the world of burndown.
New Elevore herbicide controls your toughest weeds, even glyphosate and ALS-resistant weeds like mare's tail and henbit. Talk with your retailer about Elevore herbicide today and ask how you can start elevating your burndown.
Fill once, plant all day. The Thrive 3D application system from FMC is a revolutionary in-furrow crop protection platform that plants up to 480 acres between refills. The Thrive 3D application system mounts to most major planter brands and can be yours at no cost with the FMC Freedom Pass program. To learn more, call 815-362-7747 today. Always read and follow all label directions.
Maintaining your crops is as important now as it's ever been. Howler, a revolutionary fungicide from AgBiome, can help. It provides long-lasting protection from a broad spectrum of foliar and soil diseases that affect crops. Howler is OMRI listed, has multiple modes of action, and has minimal pre-harvest and re-entry intervals. It's flexible, easy to use, and is available right now. Visit agbiome.com/howler to learn more.
The next big thing is here. From the system that brought you Roundup Ready to Extend technology comes a soybean like no other. Introducing Extend Flex Soybeans. Elite genetics, now with the addition of glufosinate tolerance. Learn more at extendflexsoy.com. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing, and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. No dicamba may be used in crop with Extend Flex soybeans unless and until approved, and no dicamba formulations are currently registered for such use in the 2021 season.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio on Farmer Friday. That means it's all about whatever you want to talk about here. Of course, agronomy related. And we've got a question that came in this morning from Doug in Illinois. And I'm super excited because I see on the phone lines, it's Doug from Illinois. Hey, Doug, how are you?
Yeah. Hi, guys. I'm wonderful. Thanks for taking my question.
You bet. We're excited. I actually had you first in the queue for things coming off my emails that came in because I saw we had a couple of boron questions come today and I really liked yours. Can you talk a little about what's going on?
Yeah, well, I applied some boron last spring and so I did some tissue testing last summer and it seemed like things were adequate on my boron and now I've done my soil test here this fall just recently and I got my results back and my boron levels are still very low. I haven't moved the needle from last year on these boron levels. So, you know, I know it's a mobile nutrient and, you know, I'm just wondering if I'm hurting myself or if that boron is still around. And if it is around, do I need to apply any more or should I go to a different form of boron, I guess?
Okay.
I'm going to do some fall application here pretty soon with dry and I just need some guidance on what do you think I should do there?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And you raised corn this year?
Yeah, I had it on both my corn and my beans.
Okay.
And basically the same deal on both of them.
What'd you get for a corn yield on average, just roughly? I want to plug in into our app here, how many pounds of boron you would have removed.
Yeah, that corn's around 190 and this year the beans were 67, but they're not always that good. So.
Okay. So here's where I'm going with this. You put on 4 pounds of a product that was about, Darren said, 18% boron. So that's 0.72 actual pounds. 190 bushel corn, just grain removal only, takes 0.46 pounds. So my point is you would have only had 0.26 pounds left, so a quarter of a pound. So if you do the math on that, that means about 1/10 of a point of a part per million. So mm-hmm. to to see if it raised it 1/10 of a point from last year. That would have been about it, and that's assuming zero loss. So let's just say that you lost 10% of what you applied. So if it went from 0.72 down to 0.65, well, you know, you see where I'm going with this. There, it's not like you put out 4 pounds of actual, you put out 4 pounds of a product that was only 18%. So I'm just trying to say there wouldn't have been a whole lot left anyway based on the crop that you removed. Soybeans wouldn't take quite as much as that, but still. What is your cation exchange capacity? Do you have any idea what that would be?
It's around 18.
Okay. So we would consider that a medium textured soil. And how about rainfall this year? Did you have a lot of rain, little rain?
Yeah, you know, we had a wet spring, and then, you know, a dry summer, of course.
Yep. Okay. But in Illinois, you compared to us, you have typically a lot more rainfall. So we would just say...
Yeah, we had a lot of rain in the spring, yeah.
Yeah. So we would just normally say, okay, if it's an 18 CEC and you have a fair amount of rain in the spring, you're going to lose some of it at that point. You have more risk of losing it right away than you do later on when you have all kinds of roots growing in the soil to absorb it. So, you know, to think that you lost 10 or 20% of that boron, I think is very likely. And if you would have lost 20% of the boron, then most of the rest of it you would have removed with the crop. So there wouldn't have been a whole lot left. So moving forward, if you want to try some dry boron in the fall, there certainly are some inexpensive products out there. We use, I think we've been using New Bore that was 15% boron, and I don't remember off the top of my head what it cost, but it was not very much money. And so we've tried some of that to build our soil test levels, and we've actually built up boron levels now to 2 or even 3 parts per million. So it absolutely can be done, but you have a little bit lighter soil than what we have on average, and you have probably double the normal annual rainfall. So plus we're even a little colder than you, so we're going to freeze up in not very long. So I'm just trying to say we have a better chance to hold it than you do. It's all, if it was me and I was in your situation, I would say, you know what, I'm going to try a half a field or a couple half fields with some, you know, a fair amount of boron in the fall. Let's just give it a shot, see what ends up happening, see if we see any difference. And I was just talking a little bit ago about this training I was doing this morning with agronomists, showing them, hey, you know, we actually, according to the tissue tests, we were very, very low, or actually deficient, and we still had really good yield. So just because your boron is low doesn't mean you still can't have good yield, especially if you're applying some in the season at some point. And my assumption here is that's probably why your tissue level showed up okay this year and things looked okay, because you put on a fair amount. I mean, 0.7 pounds, that's a fairly good dose. That's more than probably 75% of farmers are putting out. So I have to assume that would have helped at least some. Do you have any other questions? Anything else you want to talk through with that?
Well, I mean, there's elemental boron I could put on. There's various forms of boron.
Yep.
So I'm having a hard time figuring out, you know, which way to go on, you know, especially I'm going to try and spoon feed it with some liquid, you know, every pass I go next year.
Yep.
But I'm just wondering, you know, I can try the new boron, you know, and stuff like that, but I'm just, looking for a little guidance on what do you think would be best there.
Yep. So I'll say this, the lighter the soil gets, and you're kind of in between, but the lighter the soil gets, the more we say, hey, just apply it in season and a little bit as you go. The concern I always have with the liquid boron is it's expensive. You throw very much liquid boron out there and you're spending a lot of dollars, whereas the dry is roughly 1/5 the price. So if the dry will stay in the soil, and like in your case, you might want to apply some dry next spring or maybe this fall, you could try some this fall certainly. But if it was me, I'd probably try to do a little bit of dry in the fall or spring, and then I might do a little bit of foliar feeding. We have a lot of guys we work with that throw almost every pass, it's just a little trace of boron, because keep in mind, your plant can't bring in a lot at one point. It can't store it for long or anything like that. It doesn't work that way in the plant. So you got to continue to kind of spoon feed it when your parts per million are that low in the soil. I do believe, though, I mean, with a medium textured soil, you should be able to get your parts per million higher than that, and it'll hold at least for a while, because 2 2/10 of a part per million, that's not very much. I would certainly think you'd be able to get it up to 1 part per million. So I might be on just a slight build program. You don't have to spend a fortune or anything, but just put a little bit of dry out there, either fall or spring, and then do your little bit of foliar feeding. That's the direction that I would go. Now, the other thing that I wanted to mention before you go is well boron is important. NP and K is more important. So we got to make sure we're getting the soil pH right, the NP and K right, all these other things. This is another thing I was showing some of these agronomists this morning. I'm like, okay, look at how high I got the boron here, or how high I got the zinc here, or whatever. Notice my yield still wasn't that great. Why? Because I had other things in those areas that weren't fixed yet.
Yeah.
Fix the other things first, and then we really have to be focusing even more on some of these micronutrients. But it sounds to me like you're headed along the right path. You've been looking at the right stuff. And yeah, I know it's a little frustrating, and you're always going to be looking for answers, but I got to tell you, it seems like the more answers we learn, the more questions we have, and it's just a little trial and error. You just keep working from there, but it sounds like you're headed down the right path.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
You bet. Yeah, thanks, Doug. Appreciate it.
Hey, we had another boron question. It's probably a good time for that, too. This one's from Kevin up in North Dakota, and he said, what kind of soil-applied boron do you guys use? Around our area, they're using a 10% pelletized product. I have a hard time believing we're going to raise levels when we're only spreading a pellet every few feet. We're not spreading it everywhere like with a liquid.
Well, it depends on that pellet, how big that is. So if it was this huge pellet and it was once every few feet, then yes, I totally get it. But that's where we like a little bit smaller material. Now, it obviously, we don't want it blowing away in the wind or anything like that, but we've been using a product called NuBor. But let's talk a little more about that. This is one of the reasons we don't love when herbicide gets impregnated on fertilizer, because the coverage will not be as good. And we have to have good coverage out there if we want to get it evenly in that soil and just get overall better weed control. Because keep in mind, a weed could come up in a tiny, tiny, tiny area. Whereas the boron or some of these nutrients, if you get it down in the soil, a lot of these plants have great big root systems and they can pull stuff in from a ways away. So I'm not as worried about it with just fertilizer as I would be with herbicide. But yeah, we've been using a 15% dry product, lots of different ones out there. Just look for something reasonable in price and something that gets the boron into your plant. We'll be right back.
We now bring you an important news bulletin.
This just in from Live Action News.
Innovation has come to the world of burndown.
New Elevore herbicide controls your toughest weeds, even glyphosate and ALS-resistant weeds like mare's tail and henbit. Talk with your retailer about Elevore herbicide today and ask how you can start elevating your burndown.
The only innovation that matters is the one I need.
With NK Seeds, their R&D program actually listens to farmers like me, so I get solutions that solve my challenges.
With the support to make them count. Because progress means pushing my potential, and success matters.
Push your potential at nkseeds.com.
Your soybeans are in the bin, but the game isn't over yet. Score more points this year by taking your beans to the end zone. If your beans went in the bin at low moisture, you can naturally rehydrate to reclaim lost yield with the End Zone Fan Control System from Farm Shop MFG. At $10 beans, every point of moisture below your target takes away 15 cents per bushel. That means raising 9% moisture beans to 13 can increase your profits by 60 cents per bushel. Score more yields in the End Zone from Farm Shop MFG.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Bellum is Rotam North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Bellum. For more information, visit bellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
It's about time.
Applied at Planting, new Xyway 3D fungicide from FMC delivers foliar disease protection from planting to harvest. Active ingredient flutriafol moves from the soil through the corn as it grows for inside-out protection from roots to tassel. For season-long protection, choose first-of-its-kind in-furrow Xyway 3D fungicide. To learn more, call 815-362-7747 today. Always read and follow all label directions.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy. All the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio on a Farmer Friday. Taking your calls and agronomic questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. We've got Kyle, who's been holding for a while in Pennsylvania. Kyle, thanks for hanging on there.
Yeah, that's okay. We're in a rain delay here, so I'm not in a combine.
Okay, so you want to talk a little burr cucumber, and I'll just preface this by saying earlier in the show, we were talking to Steve out in the state of Washington, and he said he had jointed goat grass. That's a really tough weed that a lot of guys haven't heard of. Well, in many parts of the country, burr cucumber is just not around, but that's one of the top 10 toughest broadleaf weeds out there.
Yes, I agree with you. For example, I had a 24-acre field of beans last year that I sprayed with Roundup late, and it fried everything. And then when the beans were just that they were turning yellow, then you could look across the field and I could just see patches of pickles all over the field. So I committed myself to driving in and killing them damn pickles. And believe it or not, I just harvested the corn there the other day and it was loaded with them again. In the corn, up as high as above the cobs, up into the tassels. So I know I'm going to have them next year. I have 550 acres that we are treating this way. We are putting 3 ounces of Anthem Maxone up front with no atrazine. So just a light application. Then when you get to knee high, or just as you can get in with the sprayer, come back with either Callisto at 6 ounces or Anthem with 1 quart of atrazine. And it just doesn't seem to hold them back.
Okay, I like the strategy of saving that atrazine for post. That's one of my strategies on that weed, too, because I know a lot of guys will say, oh, man, if I use those atrazine premixes down, that works pretty good. It does. I'm not saying it doesn't, but you can only use the atrazine one time if you want to rotate to something other than corn, and I would save it for the post as well. Are the HPPDs actually killing the burr cucumber? Is it just that they're running out of residual and you're getting more coming later?
I think we're running out of residual. I think that's what's actually happening because new ones are germinating. You walk in the corn, you know, and it's above your head, and you can find new plants growing that are crawling up the stalk of the corn. And it's in some lush, good ground, one field that I'm thinking of in particular, but I'm actually treating 550 acres with a 2-application trip just to control them.
Wow.
And I know my agronomist said if you could drive through and it didn't wrap your auger on the corn head, it's a success. But I think there just has to be something better out there.
Well, I know there are some guys that are experimenting with planting cover crop in there, but I think the cover crop takes something off the corn yield. I haven't talked to anybody yet that said, well, my best yield was where I established a cover crop after my corn was 12 inches tall. But they have seen less weed pressure. That's been one thing I would say. But I think it might cost you too much yield.
So you're coming in at almost knee-high corn with 6 ounces of Callisto.
Which is way too much.
Right, which is a really high rate that will definitely still have some HPPD left for next year. And you're still having burr cucumber?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, that's something.
Yeah, it's a late emerger, Brandon.
In corn, here, let me ask you this. What's your row spacing in corn? What are you at, 30-inch rows?
30-inch rows, yeah.
And your planting population?
34,000.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In fact, the field that the pickles were the worst was my national corn grower entry. But it is what it is. pickles were there. I had no choice.
Hmm. Are there any guys around you that are planting in 20-inch rows?
Maybe over in Jersey, not in my particular 10-mile radius that I know of.
Yep. Well, the reason why I ask is with every weed out there, the better crop canopy we have, the better weed control we have. And if we can't get it with herbicide, then a lot of times that's what we start talking about. Because honestly, if it was me, I would probably start with Verdict rather than the Anthem Max, because Sharpen's going to be better than Cadet. So that's the first thing that I would say. But in terms of your Callisto, when you're using that high a rate, I mean, that's more than I've ever recommended in my life. And usually we get control out of 3 ounces along with the atrazine. So I'm just wondering do we by chance have some HPPD-resistant burr cucumber? I don't know. It just seems strange to me. Doesn't it to you, Darren? I mean, that's a...
It's a late comer, Brent. Makes it so tough. Now, with the viney
weeds...
We have
tremendous residual with that. I mean, that's such a high rate.
It's got...
Two years ago in that same field, I had corn there. And I sprayed it, you know, up front with no atrazine, came back and hit it when it was 8 inches high or 10 inches, like Roundup recommends.
Yep.
And then my agronomist looked at the field. He said, I hate to tell you this, but you got to go back and spray that field again.
Yeah.
Then I went back in that I barely could get the spray nozzles through the corn rows, you know, to kill it.
Yeah. Now,
here's the thing, Brian. It's a great big seed. And it can germinate from deep.
True.
So think like cocklebur a little bit, how even when we had tons of residual out there, if we didn't kill them the first time, we were in big trouble.
Yeah,
we didn't have great crop canopy.
I understand that, but here's my concern. I can't believe that we're actually killing what's there. Are you convinced that, Kyle, that we're killing what's there? I think Darren asked you that already, something like that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, are we sure that those plants are dead when you've sprayed?
Yes, they are. And actually, Darren was right. I actually dug up the seed, went in the field, dug it up, and I measured 5 inches deep.
Yeah.
Just like what cocklebirds are doing, except this one's even tougher than a cocklebur. It's a vine that's going to climb.
Yep.
And it's the whole neighborhood. I mean, I talked to the neighboring farmer next door, the next guy next to him. It's in our area. It's tough. I'm just looking for some ideas, something different to try.
Yep. So the only big thing I would say is I'm starting with Verdict and making sure I've got a stout rate of Sharpen in there. That's Verdict is Outlook plus Sharpen.
What kind of tillage are you doing, Kyle? Are you doing regular tillage or are you doing no-till?
That particular field was no-till in the soybean stubble, so that was a no-till application.
Yep.
And I did burn it down. I mean, I had Roundup in and burned it down, but there were no pickles there at that time. You know,
sure.
I'm just wondering if you see seeds laying on top of the ground.
I did go look, but that's very possible.
I was just thinking about if we went no-till and we used, you know, a nitrogen application, maybe with some decomp or some kind of breakdown agent to break residue down.
But to his point, he's got some 5 inches deep, and he did.
I know the stuff that's down deep, you can't get.
I don't know. So I'll say this: most all the time here on the show, we have fantastic answers for weed control questions. This one sounds awfully tough to me. And honestly, if I'm fighting it that hard, and by the way, for all of these viney species, Status is a better product than an HPPD. But if you're already killing everything that's there, that's the main reason why I just wanted to make absolutely sure I had the correct answer on that. So if there are some plants I'm not killing, I'm switching over to Status. Costs a lot more money, but I will kill every single plant. I just won't leave near the residual that I will with the HPPDs.
Right, gotcha.
But if I'm having that big an issue where I use a pre and a post, both have real good activity, but like I say, switch over to that Verdict and that'll help you some at least. But if I still can't get control, I mean, I hate to say this because it costs a lot of money to switch spacings, but I'd be at least trying some 20-inch corn. So I'm serious, because that will give you better crop canopy, and the better crop canopy you have, the less chance you have for those burr cucumbers coming in late.
Right. I mean, I have a 7-acre field that I didn't harvest corn on yet, and I actually purposely put soybeans there 2 years in a row so I could look over the field and see pickles.
Yeah.
You know, so I'll know that in a week from now when I harvest it. But anyway, that could be another trying different things. You know,
yes.
Beans, you can get through beans no matter when.
Yep.
Versus corn.
Yep.
And I can't find any helicopters that want to fly in Pennsylvania with Roundup in them.
Yeah. Yep, that does become an issue. I'll say too, you know, me talking to you about this 20-inch row corn or whatever, you can also just go back. So how we've typically done this is we've taken our 30-inch planter and we just have gone over maybe 7 inches. We've also tried going over 15 inches, so it's legitimately 15-inch corn. But, you know, basically you make it twin row, so you could use your normal corn head. Or you make it, you know, oh, hey, I got rows every 15 inches. You could at least try that on just a few acres and just see if that makes a difference and muddle through it. But anyway, thanks for the question. We'll be right back.
Heat, drought, wind, hail, northern corn leaf blight, gray leaf spot. If your corn is under stress, you are too. Get Veltima fungicide, swift activity with fast payback, an expanded application window. Makes life simple, and it's the secure choice with powerful residual for visibly healthier corn. Swift, simple, secure. Veltima fungicide. Call your BASF rep today. Always read and follow label directions. Veltima fungicide is not registered in all states.
Have resistant weeds invaded your cornfields? Tough 5EC, manufactured by Beltrim Crop Protection, can help. When added to the post-emergence tank mix, Tough 5EC synergizes the effectiveness of HPPD inhibitors on key broadleaf weeds. In fact, university field trials have shown 5 to 30% increased control of herbicide-resistant Palmer amaranth and water hemp. Now that's tough on weeds. Ask your local retailer about Tough 5EC or visit BeltramUSA.com. Always read and follow label instructions.
You would never plant seed or apply herbicide with a 20% success rate. So why are you still applying phosphorus fertilizer with a maximum availability of only 20%? Double your phosphate availability and increase yields with NutriCharge from AgroTech USA. NutriCharge's patent-pending technology protects phosphorus from negative chemical reactions that tie up your fertilizer investment. NutriCharge performs across all soil types and pHs. Contact AgroTech USA or your local Van Dees supply representative today.
A history of success means proven performance, but let's call performance what it is. Profitability. And boosting yours, no matter what the season brings, is the goal of DeKalb brand corn. Backed by exclusive genetics, whole farm solutions, and unmatched dealer support, let nothing shake your perseverance. Ask your dealer how DeKalb brand corn can help you realize a future of performance. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, mare's tail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor Herbicide Brands. Always read and follow label directions.
You deserve to have a building that will last for generations. With more than 110 years of experience and thousands of satisfied customers, Morton Buildings is the industry leader you can trust. Unlike other construction companies, you work with Morton Buildings craftsmen from conception to completion. There's no better time to buy. Lock in your new building for 2020 today. Contact your local Morton sales office or visit MortonBuildings.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio on a Farmer Friday. Our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD. We got John with us now in southeast Minnesota. John's been hanging on a little bit too. How you doing, John?
Not too bad. Yourself? We got a nice day here finally. 52 degrees and sunshine. The snow is just about gone.
We'll take that sunshine. I understand calcium's on your mind. What you got?
Well, what I got, my soil pH is like 7.1, 7.2, which is high. And when I ran tissue analysis, it still shows up that I'm sufficient to low on calcium uptake. And my phos levels are pretty high from a lot of manure getting put on. I have the Bray 1 is from anywhere from 60 to 85. So my phos levels are getting up there. I guess my question is, Are my FOS levels getting high enough to tie up this calcium?
Do you have, by chance, a base saturation reading? Do you have your soil test right there? I'm just curious how high that calcium is on the base saturation test.
Probably from 65, 71.
Yeah, I think we're okay. Yep. I think I'm just hearing the voice of Dick Goff, who's been a guest on our show many times. He lives over in that central
not too far
Minnesota
away from you.
Area. Yeah. And Dick says, we've got pHs that are 7 or above, and we've got tons of calcium in the soil. We can't get it in the plant. We don't have calcium availability, and that's a big deal.
Yeah, but you fix that not necessarily with any more or less phosphorus. A lot of times it's a little bit of sulfur to loosen some things up. You got to have good drainage in that soil too. But your phosphorus levels are not that high. I've talked a couple times already in the show about this training I was doing this morning with a whole bunch of agronomists from around the country, and it was talking about soil fertility levels. And I just told them what I want to have on my farm. And I said, this isn't necessarily your farm. I got heavy soil. But I said, I want 100 on the P1, 100. And I said, I want my calcium to be 65 to 75. Your calcium is perfect. Your phosphorus, to me, sounds just about perfect. So you're fine in terms of that. The other thing is, when you look at the plant tissue analysis, that may or may not be right. When it says sufficient to low, well, sufficient to low for what? For 100 bushel corn? For 200? For 300? They don't tell you that. So I'm not that worried about that. I'm really not. But I'm just going to guess, and we'll see. If you got soil tests in front of me or in front of you, you'll tell me. But I'm just going to guess your sulfur levels are not high. What are your sulfur levels?
No, my sulfur levels are not high.
Okay.
In fact, I had to add extra sulfur last year.
There you go. So
yeah, I'm at 6 and 8 parts per million.
Yep, that sounds about right. So if you just simply get your sulfur levels up, that's going to help. That's going to start. There's going to be more reaction in that soil, and you're going to see your calcium levels most likely. Since you have a lot of calcium, parts per million. What do you have? 2,000 parts per million.
Let's see here. Yep. 1,800 to 3,000.
Okay.
Yeah. I really screwed up because I did the old 6.2, 6.3, and I was going to straighten out my pH problem once and for all, and we overcorrected.
Same exact thing happened on our farm. So now you just kind of have to sit there for a little while. But the sulfur helps with that a little bit too. So you're going to find that calcium is going to come more available. And so there are going to be people, well, even like Dick Goff, Darren was talking about from Midwest Labs years ago, he would talk about, well, maybe you need a little gypsum. There's no way I'm throwing more calcium out there. I do not think you need that. Just get your sulfur levels up at least a little bit and do everything else right. Get your adequate nitrogen, get your potassium going. You're going to be fine. So I'm not too worried about it. It sounds to me like actually you got fairly decent soil. The pH is just a hair high, but it's not that bad. You'll be fine. Just make sure you're getting all your nutrient levels up, and you'll be good.
Okay, another question on CPI ratings.
Sure.
If you're going to purchase land in the, like all my, I went out and looked on mine on a couple 80s I own.
Yep.
And it's like 90, 97, 98, and a neighboring farm is down around 80.
Yep.
Should that be a deal breaker, or is it just you have to a little more TLC when you're fertilizing?
Well, let's put it this way, John. How many farmers out there look at the field across the road and say, yeah, I don't want to buy that? You know what I mean? If we can buy that, yes, exactly. We just say, yep, we're going to buy it, and then we're going to make the best of it. No, I mean, the CPI thing, there's a little bit to that. But what I want to know much more than that is, what's the soil test say? If you've got fairly decent organic matter levels and cation exchange capacity, for the most part, we're going to be fine. The biggest thing that I look at is it pure sand that I can't irrigate, or you know, something like that? So we can fix most everything else. So no, I don't think that is that big a deal. Was it years ago? Maybe, but I just don't see it. And we've kind of shown that on ground that we own. we've taken all these different soil types and all these different CPI ratings, and we've made them all where it's actually pretty equal. We can do the same kind of thing with variety. You know, a lot of people will be like, oh, variety selection, such a big deal. Don't get me wrong, it is, but what you do with that soil is so important. If you have, you fix the drainage, you get your pH right, you get all the nutrient levels right, it takes care of a lot of those other things. So yeah, I would not be all that worried about it. But the flip side of this is, as a buyer, I'd say, well, you know, it's only an 80 CPI, and try to work your price down as much as you can. But you got to know all along, hey, if you just invest the right dollars there, I think you're going to be fine.
Okay. All right, well, thanks, guys.
You bet. Thanks, John. Appreciate it.
Yeah, the crop productivity index, that's interesting. And also just the soil survey data and soil types. And we get a lot of questions about that. It's just the same thing.
Super accurate.
And you can overcome a lot of things by fixing fertility. And maybe some of those soils aren't
fertility
rated as high because, oh, it's really high in magnesium and low in calcium or something like that. Well, we can change some of those things. And a lot of times, like you say, maybe you got a piece of ground that's not worth very much money. Awesome. Buy it. And then put $500 or $1,000 into fixing it back up. Okay, got one here from, I love the name, Tired of Walking. Can I spray 2,4-D ester in a burndown mix and plant right after if I'm using Enlist E3 soybeans? Usually we would have waited 2 weeks at least before we'd plant regular beans.
Well, I mean, can you legally? No. Can you and not hurt the beans? Yes.
Yeah, so what you could do is you could switch and use Enlist One, and then, yeah, you could do that right away.
Sure. That's labeled, and that's legal.
All right. Talking about deep tillage, got this one from MLD, who says, in my state, if you do not no-till even one farm or many that you farm, you're not eligible for subsidies available in the area. Is that the case in your area that doing tillage could rule you out of receiving certain subsidies?
You know, I don't know all the rules to it, so I probably shouldn't say, but I assume that that is the case. I know that for a lot of the programs that are out there, you have to maintain a certain amount of residue. Now, does that necessarily have to be absolute no-till? I don't think so. But yeah, you just have to ask some people that run maybe the government agencies around here to give you the official thing. I don't think it's exactly as you described there. I don't think it's 100% no-till, but it's certainly reduced till.
All right, got this one from Ivers. He said, you guys are a great resource for farmers and others. Really appreciate what you're doing. Hey, thank you. We really appreciate hearing that. Get another one wondering, this is from PWW. Wonder if you would do a video on chemical mixing and also mixing trailers and how we could do a better job mixing chemicals up.
Oh, we actually have done some of that stuff. You know, the very, very simple rule that I always think of, because I can't remember what some of the exact things are. I just go by this. The furthest thing away from water, that's what needs to go together with water first. And also understand that herbicides were designed to mix in water. Herbicides weren't necessarily designed to mix with other herbicide water mixes, especially when you've got dry flowables. Let's say you had two different dry flowables. One you throw right in the tank. The other one you may have to pre-slurry. So we got to be a little bit careful with that. Additionally, you always want to have some compatibility agent on the spray truck. So just in case something starts to go bad in the tank, you go, uh-oh, and you throw something in right away. And a lot of times that'll stop it right there, because the last thing you want is to scrape stuff out. Scraping sludge out of a spray tank, that's no fun.
Nope. That's probably a question from somebody that's had to do that at one point or another. So anyway, hopefully that information helps. Thanks for the question. Thanks for listening to our show today. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.